Okay.
Potatoes, there's 10 of them, so plural.
Potato. The potato. Any other point? Okay. So text number 18. Tonight we'll go from 18 to 29. Shukadeva Swami continued, please hear from me with great attention how Prajapati Daksha, who was very affectionate to his daughters, created different types of living entities through his semen and through his mind.
The word Dutti Vatsala indicates that all the Rajas were born from Daksha's daughters. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that apparently Daksha has no son.
So then he's giving birth to daughters, the daughters are marrying great sages, and then those sages are populating the universe along with Daksha's daughters. And this is how the universe is being populated. With his mind, Prajapati Daksha first created all kinds of demigods, demons, human beings, birds, beasts, aquatics, and so on. So when Prajapati Daksha saw that he was not properly generating all kinds of living entities, he approached a mountain near the Vindhya mountain range, and there he executed very difficult austerities. Near that mountain was a very holy place named Akka Marshana. There, Prajapati Daksha executed ritualistic ceremonies and satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, by engaging in great austerities to please him. My dear King, I shall fully explain to you the Hamsa Guhya prayers, which were offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead by Daksha, and I shall explain how the Lord was pleased with him for those prayers. Okay, so this is the nature of the Vedic literature, is that it is eternal. So sometimes it becomes manifest, sometimes it becomes unmanifest. Just like Krishna says himself in the Bhagavad Gita, I am speaking these prayers to you once again because they have become lost over time. So Krishna himself sometimes needs to reestablish the message of the Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes the Srimad Bhagavatam needs to be re-spoken within society, and sometimes these different prayers, they need to be re-spoken within society. So these scriptures or these prayers are eternal. They are not temporary. And we see in the literature, which comes from the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that many of these literatures they have been recorded, apparently, for the first time by the followers of the previous acharya, the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But actually, they are eternal, these scriptures. So an example is Sri Harinam Chintamani, which is a very famous work, which was compiled by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes it, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that this is a conversation between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Haridas Thakur. So he is writing the conversation that he is witnessing through his divine vision within his own heart. So Srila Haridas Thakur and Mahaprabhu, they're having this conversation 500 years ago in Jagannath Puri, and then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, maybe 200 years later or 300 years later, then he sees that conversation taking place in his heart and he records it. And it's called Sri Harinam Chintamani, like that. So these conversations are eternal. When Lord Chaitanya appears again and again and again in different universes, then he himself and Haridas Thakur, they appear again and again and again, and they have this conversation. So in other words, the knowledge or the Shastra, it is eternal. But sometimes it is prakat, sometimes it is aprakat. So sometimes it is manifest, and sometimes it is unmanifest. But they're always existing, these hypostases. There's many examples like this. The Bhagavad Gita itself. Krishna says it had become lost over time. So Krishna says, I have to re-speak it again to Arjuna. He said, previously I focused on the sun god, Vivasvan. Vivasvan gave it to Manu, Manu gave it to Ikshvaku, like that. So this is the system. So here these particular prayers have been spoken previously, now they'll be repeated and recorded again. But it's not as if they're new. It is simply they're eternal. The Vedic literatures are eternal. The Puranas, the Vedas themselves, they are eternal. And they become manifest again and again. So, any points?
You mean to say
Any other point?
At the beginning of the creation, Brahma appears to the universe and gives suitable bodies for the living entities. And he says, Daksha, when this one was from Daksha, he also populates the universe. So does it mean that living entities he has to recreate, or what happens at the end of Manu's life?
What's the point?
Like here it says that the Daksha is populating the universe.
Mm.
So there were no living entities before that, or before Daksha populating this universe?
Yeah, well, it means after, there's the initial creation, and then we hear that Brahma creates the different stages and the different suns, they populate the universe. Then there are partial annihilations periodically. So after these partial annihilations of pralaya, then the manvantars or the sages, they have to repopulate the universe again. Because the lower planetary systems, Earth and the lower planetary systems, the life forms are destroyed, then they have to repopulate them again. So it happens again and again and again. Any other points? No, they just went under the ocean.
Yeah, but now that it's creation again
coming up, so I'm getting the Daksha is number three, yeah. Maybe the universe needs more population, that could be one way of looking at it. It could be that there needs to be more population within the universe, and then they're sending out more generators, something like that. Not exactly clear. What's taking place. It doesn't mention if there's some sort of pralaya taking place or something like that. Any other points? Okay. Prajapati Daksha said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is transcendental to the illusory energy and the physical categories it produces. He possesses the potency for unfailing knowledge and supreme willpower, and he is the controller of the living entities and the illusory energy. The conditioned souls who have accepted this material manifestation as everything cannot see him, for he is above the evidence of experimental knowledge. Self-evident and self-sufficient, he is not caused by any superior cause. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto him.
The transcendental position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is explained herein. He is not perceived by the conditioned souls, who are accustomed to material vision and cannot understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead exists in his abode, which is beyond that vision. Even if a materialistic person could count all the atoms in the universe, he would still be unable to understand Supreme Personality of Godhead as conformed in Brahma Samhita 5.34. Pantastu Bodhisattva Vastar Samprayam Vayorasi Manasa Muni Pungavana Sova Pir Ashtiyata Prapada Sini Vinchat Sastri Govinda Madhi Purisham Samsam Jami. The conditioned souls may try to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead for many billions of years through their mental speculative processes, traveling at the speed of the mind or the wind, but still the Absolute Truth will remain inconceivable to them because a materialistic person cannot measure the length and breadth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's unlimited existence. If the Absolute Truth is beyond measurement, one may ask, how can one realize Him? The answer is given here by the word Swayambhuve. One may understand Him or not, but nevertheless, He is existing in His own spiritual potential.
What are the points in this report? Any other points?
Krishna is ever expanding, and because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he continues to expand himself continuously, and it seems that it is beyond comprehension of how he continues to expand in this form, and that is why he unlimitedly has increased so how it can go. It is beyond our comprehension of the definition of God.
So this is described in the prayers of the personified Vedas, which is near the end of the 10th canto of the Bhagavad Gita. I think you read that chapter 88 or so. So in this prayers of the personified Vedas, it mentions that Krishna, he expands himself continuously, meaning that his energies are always expanding. So when he further expands his energies, at the next moment, then he perceives or understands all his potency. But then, in the next moment, he realizes that he is more expansive or greater than what he previously perceived. And then after realizing that, then he realizes everything, and then he realizes he's greater again. So Prabhupada explains, it's not that Krishna does not know himself, but as soon as he understands every moment how powerful he is and how great his energies are, then at the next moment he realizes there's more to understand. So at that moment then he understands all of that, and he realizes there's even more of that. So it just shows that God is unlimitedly powerful. So Brahma Samhita says, Vedeshu dulabham adulabham atma bhakto. By studying the Vedas, you can never fully understand God. In other words, he cannot be understood simply by mental speculation, which means just by empirical knowledge. In other words, you cannot just understand God through study. It ultimately is through devotional bhakti that you can understand Krishna. Krishna will not be understood simply by someone who is trying to understand him from a materialistic point of view or with their limited faculty, or in other words, we say from the ascending process of knowledge. The ascending process of knowledge means that we are trying to understand God through our own material abilities, our own intellect. We say that I'm trying to understand everything about God through my limited perception. Whereas the descending process of knowledge is what we follow, which is the Vedic process, is that through parampara, then knowledge of God is passed down to us and it is revealed to us. So in that way we can understand God to a certain degree through hearing submissively in disciplic succession. Then we get some perception of God's greatness. But in terms of understanding Him just through our own limited ability, we can only understand it very minutely. We'll understand him far more by hearing submissively in just a quick succession and understanding his greatness in that way. But even then, because he is achincha means unlimited or inconceivable, then you will get to a point when you're dealing with Krishna where you will just fold your hands and you will say, you are what you are and I simply worship you. Because he's too great to understand. We cannot fully understand or fully comprehend Krishna. He is too powerful. So we're not interested in understanding or knowing everything about his opulence of power. We're simply interested in serving him. Ultimately. And that's how we'll know him, you can say. Because then the yoga maya principle will be removed in the sense that the devotee is not interested in knowing everything about Krishna, but simply loving Krishna. So when we become more devoted to Krishna, then yogamaya will cover us so that we will forget about his greatness and about his power and simply love him. Because the devotee at the end of the day is just interested in loving Krishna, knowing Krishna in a personal relationship. As Srila Prabhupada says, we just want to know Krishna, or we want to see Krishna face to face. Just like Mother Yashoda is seeing Krishna every day, face to face, the devotee simply desires to see Krishna face to face and to interact with him and serve him. But not interested necessarily knowing everything about him or his unlimited potency. But rather just to love him and serve him, that is the goal. So when one has that kind of desire, then yogamaya will cover the devotee and the devotee will perceive Krishna like that, just as a lovable object, not as the supreme lord. At least in Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, which we are aspiring to reach through following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, any points? Okay. As the sense objects, form, taste, touch, smell, and sound, cannot understand how the senses perceive them, so the conditioned soul, although residing in his body, along with the super soul, cannot understand how the supreme spiritual person, the master of the material creation, directs his senses. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto that supreme lord, who is the supreme controller. Russell, would you like to read?
In the usual soul and the supreme soul sit together within the body. This is confirmed in the Upanishads by the analogy that two friendly birds live in one tree. One bird eating the fruit of the tree and the other simply witnessing and directing. Also the individual living being is compared to the bird that is eating. If eating with his friend the supreme soul, the individual living being cannot see him. Actually the super soul is directing the wandering of all senses and the enjoyment of sense objects. But the three sense objects cannot see the senses. The conditioned soul cannot see the directing soul. The conditioned soul has desires and the supreme soul fulfills them. But the conditioned soul is unable to see the supreme soul. As Prajapati Daksha offers his obeisance to the supreme soul, the super soul, even though unable to see him. Another example given is that although ordinary citizens work under the direction of the government, they cannot understand how they are being governed or what the government is. In this regard, Madhvacharya quotes the following verse from Skanda Purana. Yata Rajya Priyatvam Tu Britya Vedana Chatmana Tasa Jivana Yat Sakyam Veti Tasma Namostute. If the various servants in the different departments of big establishments cannot see the supreme managing director under whom they are working, the conditioned soul cannot see the supreme friend sitting within their body. Let us therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto the supreme friend invisible to our material eyes.
What are the points in this purport? Any other points?
Maybe I have understood that wrong thing, but I understood that Prabhupada Vaishya is offering prayers to Paramatma, not to the
Does it say specifically he's offering to Paramahansa? No, that's in the purport. Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto that Supreme Person. Okay. So I don't think he's specifically praying to the Super Soul. In the purport, it's the Super Soul. Any other points? So this example is given in the Vedas. Prabhupada also quotes this in the Bhagavad Gita, that there are two birds sitting within the heart, or there are two living entities within the body. One is the Paramatma, one is the Jivatma. So we have the soul and the super soul. Okay. So one, as Prabhupada gives the example in the Bhagavad Gita, he gives the example is like two birds sitting on the branch of the same branch of the tree. So two birds are sitting there, and one bird is simply enjoying the fruits, which is compared to the prakriti. Prakriti means the material energy, the apara prakriti, or the material energy. And the other bird is simply a witness. He is simply observing the other bird, who is the conditioned soul, who is ignoring him and simply absorbed in trying to enjoy the fruits of the material world. Now, in the material world, the living entity has no perception or understanding of Krishna's existence. In other words, they become forgetful of Krishna to a great degree. Now, people know there is a God, but most of the time, you look at the people in the world these days, if you look around society, people are not thinking of God. They know he exists and so forth, but they're just absorbed in trying to enjoy the prakriti, or the material energy, separate from Krishna. So they're ignoring God. So at some point in time, when a living entity becomes disturbed or distressed or undesirous of enjoying those fruits because he had some bitter experience. It's like sometimes you go to the fruit shop and you buy some fruit and it's not very pleasant. You know? So then you say, that's not very pleasant, so you reject it. So similarly, the living entity is trying to enjoy the material world, but then he has some bitter experience continuously. And this is what Krishna is trying to teach us. The material energy is not meant for our enjoyment. So at some point in time, we become disgusted or we become desirous of rejecting the material energy. We give up the material energy and then we turn back and we see the other bird. Or then we have perception of the super soul or Krishna. And at that time then we become aware of Krishna's existence. So this is also described by Haridas Thakur in the Harinam Chintamani. He says there are two types of jivas. What are the two types of jivas? Yeah, those two are there. But he gives a different categorization also. Anyone remember from the Harinam Chintamani? Haridas Thakur this guy. He says the introverted jiva and the extroverted jiva. So the extroverted jiva is trying to enjoy outside of himself this material energy. At some point in time when he becomes disappointed with the material world and trying to enjoy it, then he becomes an introverted jiva. He looks within himself and he tries to understand the truth. And he tries to understand what is his purpose of existence and why is he here in this material world. And he looks for answers to those questions. So at that point in time he becomes an introspective jiva. And then at that time the super soul gives him direction on how to realize Krishna or attain Krishna. So when we become interested or introspective, then Krishna will give us assistance so that we can try to attain him or reach him. Any points? Because they are only matter, the body, the life airs, the external and internal senses, the five gross elements and the subtle sense objects, form, taste, smell, sound and touch, cannot know their own nature, the nature of the other senses or the nature of their controllers. But the living being, because of his spiritual nature, can know his body, the life airs, the senses, the elements, and the sense objects. He can also know the three qualities that form their roots. Nevertheless, although the living being is completely aware of them, he is unable to see the Supreme Being, who is omniscient and unlimited. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto him.
Material senses can make an analytical study of the physical elements, the body, the senses, the temperature, the movement, the air that controls the vital force, but still they cannot understand that above all these is the real space soul. In other words, the living entity, because of it, being a super soul, can understand all the material objects, or when self realized, he can understand the Paramatma upon whom yogis meditate. Nevertheless, the living being, even the divine, cannot understand the Supreme Being, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for he is Ananda, unlimited, in all six supremes.
So are there any points here? Prabhupada is explaining that the Supreme Absolute Truth is imperceptible. In other words, it is beyond our sense perception. Ataha Sri Krishna Namadi Nabhabe Grain. He is not perceivable by our material senses. It is not easy to understand God. It is not easy to perceive God. Because when one is limited by his material senses, by his material desires, by his material mind and body, then he cannot understand God very easily. So Krishna is imperceptible to us. It's like none of us see Krishna. We think about Krishna every day, we worship Krishna every day, we chant his name, we dedicate our lives to him, but we don't see Krishna. So Krishna is very difficult to see, therefore he's imperceptible. So this is called ahokshajya. Ahokshajya means that he is beyond this material world. He is on a transcendental platform. So in order to perceive Krishna, we must also become purified and transcendental in nature. And when we have purified senses, then we can perceive Krishna. At this point in time, we can only see Krishna in his deity form. Because we are unqualified, then Krishna manifests in the form of the deity to accept our services, and so that we can render service to him in a as we desire. In other words, the desire to serve Krishna is accepted by Krishna in the form of the Archa-Vigraha, or the deity. Because at this point in time, we cannot perceive that original form of Krishna. So because we cannot perceive the original form of Krishna, Krishna appears in the form that we can perceive. So that our service can be accepted and we can gradually become purified. And the more purified a devotee becomes, the more he perceives Krishna within the deity form. So much so that you get to the point of the Chaitanya Charitamrita where you see the deity was talking and walking and directly communicating with the devotees. You see the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they had direct conversations with their deity. It was like Sanatana Goswami, he directly had conversation with his deity, Madan Mohan. That he was keeping Madan Mohan in a tree because he was a mendicant. He was like a Babaji, so he was living in a very renounced way in Vrindavan. So he kept the deity in the tree, and each day he would take some atta, some flour, and he would roll some balls, and then he would cook them in the coals, in the fire, and he'd offer them to the deity, and then he would take like that. So then, after a few days, and the deity said, can you at least put some salt into these little, I think they're called buddy, like little flower balls. Very simple. Can you at least put some salt in there? So then, Sanatana Goswami was speaking to the deity. And he said, I'm very old, so please just be understanding and please just be accepting of my offering. He said, because I'm very old, it's very difficult for me to secure these different ingredients. So today you'll want salt, tomorrow you'll want sugar, and then next day you want milk, and then next day you want vegetables, and I don't have so much ability now to. So please just accept like that. So the deity and Sanatana Goswami are having a conversation. Okay. So this is a very exalted level. So as we become purified, the deity will reciprocate with us more. But it doesn't mean that you have the right to say to your deity, I'll just offer you something simple like that. No, the deity should be offered the best of what we have. The deity should be offered the best of everything that we have. That should be the service mentality of the Lord. So, any points?
They still serve that kind of ability.
What's that?
They still serve that kind of ability.
Do they?
Yeah. Because when we were elected lunchtime, and there was a gentleman who said that we were following the boy now, and he would get that option. And they served the thing, and it was really like cooked on the floor.
Any other points?
In the beginning, it shows that you mentioned earlier in the importance of deity worship and how that is related to my very first spiritual
performance. Any other points?
What I don't understand is but devotees, those who are advanced, they can understand him, so not fully, but they do understand him.
Yeah, to some degree.
Yeah. They cannot understand him, but they cannot understand him.
Yeah, I mean, you can't understand him fully, so it's correct. When one's consciousness is completely purified of the contamination of material existence, gross and subtle, without being agitated as in the working and dreaming states, and when the mind is not dissolved as in sushupti, deep sleep, one comes to the platform of trance. Then one's material vision and the memories of the mind which manifest names and forms are vanished. Sorry, are vanquished. Only in such a trance is the Supreme Personality of Godhead revealed. Thus let us offer our respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seen in that uncontaminated, transcendental state. What is the bundle for you?
There are two stages of God realization. One is called Sushmaya, or very easily understood, generally by mental speculation. And other is called Durusneya, understood only with difficulty. Brahmatma realization and Brahman realization are considered Sushneya. But realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Durusneya. As described here, what attains the ultimate realization of the Personality of Godhead when one gives up the activities of the mind, feeling, feeling and willing. Or, in other words, when mental speculation stops. This transcendental realization is above sushupti, deep sleep. In our gross conditional stage, we perceive things through material experience and remembrance. And in the subtle stage, we perceive the world in dreams. The process of vision also involves remembrance and also exists in a subtle form. Above gross experience and dream is sushupti, deep sleep. And when one comes to the completely spiritual platform, transcending deep sleep, he attains prana. This is the sattva, or Vasudeva sattva, in which the personality of God is revealed.
That's good. Okay, so what are the points in this first paragraph?
Thank you.
So Prabhupada says here that it is difficult to understand Krishna. That's interesting, because then he also says in the next few purports, he says it's easy to understand Krishna. So he actually says both things. It's difficult, and he also says it's easy. Like that. So which is true? Okay, very good. So then how do you explain that? But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about devotees who are taking to it. So what is the understanding? Prabhupada says it's difficult and it's also easy. So which one is it? That's one way of understanding. So how else can we understand? Prabhupada also makes that point here. So in other words, the process of bhakti is easy. Krishna says in the ninth chapter, in the beginning of the ninth chapter of the Gita, he says it's susukha. It is very pleasing, it is very easy to perform bhakti. And it's a simple process actually. Just like, what are we doing now? Right? We're doing shravanam, kirtanam, we're hearing, we're chanting. It's not a difficult thing, actually. The process is very easy. But this very easy process is very powerful, very sublime. It can purify the consciousness very deeply. So this is the process of bhakti. It is an easy process. However, Prabhupada also points out it is difficult. What is the difficult part? The difficult part is the purification is intense. That Krishna, in order to purify your heart of your material attachments, he will purify you in a very intense fashion. That is the process of bhakti. I remember many years ago, I was in a class in Sydney in 2001, in the very beginning, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj was giving class, and His Holiness Indrajumna Swami was there. And at the end of the class, when Indrajumna Swami, he asked Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he said, is it possible to become purified in bhakti without going through severe reverses or difficulties or great obstacles and challenges in our devotional service? Is it possible to become purified without going through a very intense purification? And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, no, it is not. Yeah, you must go through intense purification. Krishna will put the obstacles in your path. Prabhupada says this in the first place. It is actually Krishna who creates these obstacles to purify your heart and your consciousness. So the process is easy. To become Krishna conscious, we follow a very simple process. We do the same thing every day. It's a very simple process to become Krishna conscious. But it is difficult in the sense that Krishna will give you intense purification. Because he knows what you need in order to become materially detached. So we must understand that the process is intense. But the Bhagavatam has already said in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, this is only a dream. But sometimes you have them. So. Maybe you don't want to have them, but you have them. But for the person who's awake, he doesn't take it as seriously as you take it. So you're simply going through a dream. So is it a bad thing, or is it just in your mind? I know you identify with the mind. Prabhupada says in this purport, we're about to get to it. Prabhupada says we have to not identify with the mind.
Are you identifying with the mind?
You're asking me personally?
Yes.
What do you think? But is my answer correct? Everything that I'm saying to you correct?
Yes.
So then what's the argument?
But not the argument. Why do you have to identify with the mind?
No, you're choosing to identify with the mind.
No,
I don't know what you
want to identify with the mind.
But you're still doing that.
Well, what's the problem then?
The problem is you're not sincere enough or intense enough in your devotional service yet. That's all.
I don't think so.
I don't think you're...
I have been very intense in my devotional service.
But do tears come to the eyes when you chant the holy name? So? You haven't got to the goal yet. So you're not intense enough yet. You haven't realized the higher verses of the Shikshastika. So how can you say?
Best,
yeah, I'm not arguing the point. There's no argument. I'm not arguing the point. I'm not saying you didn't do your best.
I can't take 2 years when they don't come, so what can I do, you
know? So I'm saying you haven't...
I'm purified easy. I think I have to suffer more.
That's right, so you have to suffer more.
Why?
So that you will cry. So that you will become attached only to Krishna.
Actually, I did cry, but nothing happened.
So maybe you weren't crying for Krishna.
Yes, I did.
Okay, but I don't think the gopis only cried one time. I don't think the gopis just cried one day and then they said, "Oh Krishna, now where are you?" Like that. Oh, I've done my best now. No, I don't think it's like that. You have to keep going, that's all. Are you satisfied? Anyway, the answer is correct, so you just have to think about it. It takes time to become pure. So, we have to go through these difficulties in order to become fully Krishna conscious. So now, Prabhupada says that in order to fully realize Krishna, we have to stop identifying with the mind and the gross body. Because we identify with the mind and the gross body, we cannot fully realize Krishna. And then Prabhupada says you even have to come over the state of consciousness called deep sleep. Now you'll see, if you examine the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, if you read Prabhupada's pastime, you will see that Prabhupada had conquered over deep sleep. It's something we haven't done yet. It means our consciousness is not sufficiently transcendental or sufficiently pure as yet. Because there are many examples where Prabhupada appeared to be sleeping. He would be having a conversation with a devotee and then he would appear to drift off to sleep and then he would come back maybe 20 minutes later or even 1 hour later or 2 hours or whatever it was. And he would directly come from that point where he had drifted off. When he had gone into... apparently, externally, into going into a state of sleep, Prabhupada did not lose consciousness. And then he would immediately come back into that same state of consciousness. Whereas for us, it is not like that. When we go to sleep in that state, we're totally incoherent. I know myself, when I go into deep sleep, there's nothing. Just very deep state of unconsciousness. What's the noise? Okay. So it's a very deep state of unconsciousness and ignorance, avidya. Because when we wake up, we don't even know where we are. You know, most mornings when I wake up, it takes me several minutes just to work out where I am. You know, I wake up in the morning and sometimes, you know, like sometimes I sleep at Chaitanya's place, sometimes I sleep at Katara's place, sometimes I sleep at, you know, my ashram. And so I wake up in the morning, sometimes I'm not even sure which place I'm in. Okay. So we're in a deep state of ignorance. Whereas when one becomes purified by devotional service and attains an advanced level of Krishna consciousness, he doesn't even get affected by deep sleep. In other words, he doesn't lose his consciousness of Krishna. Right? He doesn't identify with the mind, because we identify with the mind, we continuously forget Krishna. Just like today I was chanting my japa, and you know, my mind just goes off all the time to different thoughts and different things like that. Because we identify with the mind, and we identify with the thoughts of the mind, and we take it very seriously, as opposed to just thinking of Krishna, just being satisfied with thinking of Krishna, chanting his name and thinking of him, like that. So we have to gradually, in devotional service, overcome identification with the mind and identification with the body, which includes the state of peace. Any points?
When we are facing an obstacle, does it mean that we are in the state of sensuality?
I don't understand.
I mean,
what do you say?
You know, you said that when you are, I mean, Krishna creates obstacles in your life to purify you. Right? That's what you said. So, I mean, if it is in the, when you are facing obstacles, is that the deep state?
I don't understand the question. Maybe after class you can ask me. I don't understand.
If one goes to that old Maya Purus and in Vrindavan, he chants 64 rounds or more, is not able to control the mind, you know, in mind, in the ending.
You have to go and try?
I did. I got very good. I come back here. It was more smoothing. Then started in the end. Then it was all nice. Then you come back.
Yeah, so then go regularly. I try to go once a year. To give myself a boost. Then I come back and I keep practicing, and then I go back and get a boost again. Regularly you have to do.
You have to do three days out of 10. You get up and go.
Do it regularly.
And it can complete after some time.
You have to practice. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Abhyas and Vairagya. You have to become detached and you have to practice, and then you'll get better in your devotional service.
Even while he's eating, he's having Krita and he's chanting regularly. Even when he is sleeping, you can see like after a minute or two, the flicker will go through and some voices coming from the chanting of him.
Okay, so we read the next paragraph.
Akashi Krishna Rama in the world is having a language. As long as one is situated in reality, on sensual platform, loss of service, realization of the original personality of God is impossible. Heaven is being divided, so I am able to appear. But when one engages his senses in the service of the Lord, specifically when one engages the tongue in the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra and gazing on the Krishna Prasad with the spirit of service, the supreme personality of God is revealed. This is indicated in this world by the word Sushita Maya. Sushita means purified. By the spirit of rendering service to contemplate, one's entire existence becomes Sukhi Sadhana, the platform of uncontaminated purity. Dakta therefore offers his respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is driven on the platform of Sukhi Sadhana. In this regard, the Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur quotes the following prayers by Lord Brahma from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, 14th chapter, 6th verse. Tathapi Bhuman Mahima Gunashya Se Vibodhan Abhyase Amandhan Mitra Atma Vini. One whose heart has become completely purified, my Lord, can understand the transcendental qualities of your Lordship and can understand the greatness of your activity.
The three states of the consciousness,
Means he doesn't lose consciousness when he sleeps.
This body has the spiritual mind, spiritual ego, everything. And he has material mind, material ego, material everything. So these three states of consciousness belong to, that means when you are in these three stages of consciousness, only your material covering is working, and it's not working the spiritual side. Your basic body is working. And if you self-realize, doesn't mean that you don't see.
I don't understand what you're talking about. It's very simple. Prabhupada, you just take Prabhupada's example from the Lilamrita. When Prabhupada appeared to be sleeping, he was still conscious. That's the end of the explanation. There's nothing else to explain.
I understand the
difference. Okay, that's fine. But that's the way I understand it. Okay, so Prabhupada is explaining here that our senses need to become purified to perceive Krishna. You cannot perceive Krishna with your material senses. So when we become purified in consciousness, Krishna will become perceptible. So you'll see when we chant the holy name, if we chant with a purified mind, right, then we will get rasa. Nama chintamani Krishna chaitanya rasa vigraha. There is rasa in the holy name. So Srila Rupa Goswami said that when we chant the holy name, if you have taste, then he says, why one tongue and two ears? Why not millions of tongues and millions of ears? Because there's so much taste to be had in the holy name. So this is the state of consciousness that devotees need to aspire to in their chanting, with purified mind, with purified senses. This is the point of bhakti. The point of bhakti is that we are meant to develop vasade, katha, ruchi, nam, ruchi, taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna. So this requires purification. When we become purified, we get taste, and then the chanting is not dry, it is not mechanical, it is not something that we do simply on the external platform, but we are relishing something very deep. This is purification of consciousness. Any points? Just as great learned brahmanas who are expert in performing ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices can extract the fire dormant within wooden fuel by chanting the 15 Sami Dhani mantras, thus proving the efficacy of the Vedic mantras, so those who are actually advanced in consciousness, in other words, those who are Krishna conscious, can find the super soul, who by his own spiritual potency is situated within the heart. The heart is covered by the three modes of material nature and the nine material elements. Material nature, the total, material energy, the ego, the mind, and the five objects of sense gratification. And also by the five material elements and the ten senses. These 27 elements constitute the external energy of the Lord. Great yogis meditate upon the Lord, who is situated as the Supersoul, Paramatma, within the core of the heart. May that Supersoul be pleased with me. The Supersoul is realized when one is eager for liberation from the unlimited varieties of material life. One actually attains such liberation when he engages in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, and realizes the Lord because of his attitude of service. The Lord may be addressed by various spiritual names which are inconceivable to the material senses. When will that Supreme Personality of Godhead be pleased with me? So Prabhupada first of all points out in the first two paragraphs that in order to become determined in Krishna consciousness, one has to be very pious. So this requires that in order for us to make spiritual advancement as devotees, we have to follow the four regulative principles. So therefore, when we take initiation in ISKCON, in our Gaudiya tradition, then we take the vow to do one thing and the vow to abstain from four other things. So it's called vidhi and nisheda. Vidhi means those things that we will do, nisheda means those things we will avoid. So we avoid eating meat, illicit sex, intoxication, and gambling. Why? Because if one engages in those activities, one's heart and one's consciousness becomes contaminated. And then it's very difficult to meditate upon Krishna. Actually, it's not possible to meditate upon Krishna purely. So one has to avoid those inauspicious activities so that then one can become pure in one's consciousness. Otherwise, you cannot meditate upon Krishna if you're not following a pious life. That's why we say to people in our preaching, so often when I preach to non-devotees, very much we just preach on this platform of do not eat meat. You can't even preach much of the time on higher platforms. And you'll see very often when Prabhupada would meet with the Christian people, for example, Prabhupada would simply emphasize this point again and again and again. Why do you kill the animals? Like this. So as long as you're performing such an impious activity, such an irreligious activity, such a violent activity, how can you understand something higher and spiritual? Really, I mean, some pure spiritual understanding. It is unattainable as long as one is on this material platform or in this material state of consciousness. So therefore, in order to understand Krishna, one has to live a pious life. One has to live according to the mode of goodness, according to the teachings of the scriptures. Just abstaining from eating meat won't take you back to the spiritual world. But if you don't stop doing that, then you will not be able to attain the spiritual world either. So therefore it is necessary to refrain from certain things in order to purify one's consciousness or live a pure life so that then one can cultivate Krishna consciousness. Then Prabhupada points out in the third paragraph that in order to attain Krishna one has to be prepared to give up everything in this material world. If you have any attachments in this material world, it keeps you bound in this material world. So therefore Krishna desires that we give up our attachment to everything in this material world. So he organizes our life in such a way that gradually he is purifying us and making us detached from this material world. So why does Krishna give us so many problems once again? Why does he constantly put the devotee through so many difficulties? Just like the last few days, yesterday I was at Mwulumba, our other farm in northern New South Wales. I went up there for Dhruvananda's wedding after Krishna Prabhu's son. So I gave class yesterday morning for Ram Navami at the farm, and for the few days before that I was studying the Ramayana to understand Lord Ram's pastime. And the one thing one of the realizations I got is there was so much difficulty in the Ramayana. Such a tragedy. Everything was so difficult. Dasharatha going through so much difficulty. Ram going through so much difficulty. Bharat going through so much difficulty. Sita going through so much difficulty. Now why is that? Because they are teaching us an example of what we must go through. Because we will also go through great difficulties. But nothing we will go through will be the same as what they went through. Nothing in your life will ever be as difficult as what they went through. They went through the most difficult test. Ram went through practically the most difficult test. But there's one point when Bharat goes to the forest to find Ram, and he says to Ram, you come back and rule the kingdom. I don't want the kingdom. But Ram says, no, I must stay here for 14 years. I've taken the vow. I must follow this instruction of my father, Dasharatha, but I must stay here for 14 years. And he said that this is my destiny, this is my lot in life. I cannot rebel against this. It is my fate or my destiny that I must go through this difficulty. So he said to Bharat, you must be equipoised. No matter what you go through in this material world, you must tolerate it and continue in your service to Krishna. So he said to Bharat, you go back and you rule the kingdom, and I will return after 14 years. So Bharat, he gave Ram some chapal, some shoes. He put them on, and then he took them off, and then he took those shoes back to Ayodhya, and he put them on their throne. And then Bharat lived outside of the city. He wouldn't even live in Ayodhya for those 14 years. He lived outside, and every day he would come into the city and worship those shoes. on behalf of Ram, and he ruled the government on behalf of Ram. So these are the kind of qualities that we need to develop. We need to be able to give up everything in Krishna's service and still continue our service. So that is the example we're giving in the Ramayana, in the Mahabharata, in the Bhagavatam, of how to be a pure devotee of Krishna, how to surrender everything to Krishna, and be willing to give up everything for Krishna's pleasure. So gradually Krishna is training us to be like this. Then, Prabhupada says, in the end of the purport, he says that no matter what we go through in this material world, we must not give up the process of hearing and chanting about Krishna. So even you're going through so many difficulties, but you don't give up hearing and chanting. This is actually the main activity of the devotee. The devotee continues to hear and chant about Krishna. Even though life becomes so difficult, so many obstacles, so much turbulence, so many problems are there, but we do not give up our hearing and chanting. We do not give up our sadhacha, or our spiritual activities, our service to Krishna. All these things continue, regardless. So Krishna is training us, actually. That's why he makes so many impediments in our life. But he's showing us, even during these impediments, we must continue to serve him day after day after day. And then gradually Prabhupada says that if we do this, then eventually Krishna will reveal himself to us. We'll come to a platform where we're qualified to actually directly serve Krishna. But first we have to pass all the tests. And the tests are yet to come. The best tests are yet to come. Whatever difficulty you've been through so far, then they say in English, you haven't seen, or you ain't seen nothing yet. Which means whatever you've been through so far, that's nothing compared to what's coming in the future. The real test is coming. This is just the entree. The main course is coming. The real difficulties will be there in the future. Krishna will test us more and more and more. And you see in the Ramayana, the test just kept coming. You see in Mahabharata, the test just kept coming. And then what does Kunti pray? Let those calamities come again and again. Because when I was going through those tests, that's when I remembered you the most. So let that come again and again and again. Any points?
How can you easily making his way through the impediment? So how can you easily make his way? How can you pass easily? It's so difficult, impediment.
We're talking about the stage of ruchi. When you get to the stage of ruchi, which is after nishtha, then at that point in time, it becomes easy to remember Krishna.
But he's saying about impediment.
I'm giving you the answer. If you're still finding it difficult, that means you haven't come to the platform of ruchi yet. When you come to the platform of ruchi, it will become easy to remember Krishna. Okay, so we'll read one more purport. One more verse. Anything expressed by material vibrations, anything ascertained by material intelligence, and anything experienced by the material senses or concocted within the material mind, is but an effect of the modes of material nature and therefore has nothing to do with the real nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Lord is beyond the creation of this material world, for he is the source of the material qualities and creation. As the cause of all causes, he exists before the creation and after the creation. I wish to offer my respectful obeisances unto him. So Prabhupada explains that how do we find out about Krishna? Because Krishna is imperceptible or imperceivable, or he is not easily known. So these verses are describing that Krishna is very hard to ascertain or very hard to realize. So then Prabhupada says, how do we realize Krishna? You have to hear about Krishna from one who himself has realized Krishna. And then it's very easy to realize Krishna. Otherwise, Krishna is very difficult to understand. So how do we realize Krishna? We realize Krishna through Prabhupada's grace, by Prabhupada's mercy. Because Prabhupada has realized Krishna. So because Prabhupada has realized Krishna, then he has taught his disciples, and then we're hearing from Prabhupada's disciples, then we can also realize Krishna. Gradually. That is the process of bhakti. So that which is very difficult to attain can be made easy to attain by the grace of a pure devotee. So it's by the pure devotee's mercy that we get some direct sound vibration which allows us to understand or directly perceive Krishna. Otherwise it is very difficult. You understand?
Once you enjoy them, you get attached to the material nature. That's why Krishna and Prabhupada, they have set up for us to enjoy actually transcendent of sense objects. So you have incense to smell, you have beads to touch, and in this way, these senses which we have through this body, they get purified. So you get detached from the material nature. Similarly, when we enjoy some objects in the mode of ignorance, we get attached to mode of ignorance. When you enjoy the objects in the mode of passion, then you get attached to that mode. And that's why we have this perfect, we have to engage all our senses in the transcendental sense objects. Seeing Krishna, touching Krishna, smelling Krishna, hearing about Krishna. And then you gradually loosen from the attachment to the material nature.
Any other points?
I was thinking of
what?
I'm scared.
I'm pretty scared. I'm pretty scared. What choice do we have? You have to take shelter of the advanced devotees, that's all. It's difficult for us to become Krishna conscious, but if we take shelter of the advanced devotees, then by their mercy, we can also be lifted to the place where they will go. Just be humble, try your best, and leave the rest to Krishna and his devotees.